As an addition to their foster father, Crean, the pups had adopted Amundsen. They tyrannized over him most unmercifully. It was a common sight to see him, the biggest dog in the pack, sitting out in the cold with an air of philosophic resignation, while a corpulent pup occupied the entrance to his dogloo. The intruder was generally the pup Nelson, who just showed his forepaws and face, and one was fairly sure to find Nelly, Roger and Toby coiled up comfortably behind him. At hoosh time, Crean had to stand by Amundsen's food, since otherwise the pups would eat the big dog's ration while he stood back to give them fair play. Sometimes their consciences would smite them, and they would drag round a seal's head, half a penguin, or a large lump of frozen meat or blubber to Amundsen's kennel for rent. It was interesting to watch the big dog play with them, seizing them by the throat or neck in what appeared to be a fierce fashion, while really quite gentle with them, and all the time teaching them how to hold their own in the world and putting them up to all the tricks of dog life. The drift of the Endurance in the grip of the pack continued without incident of importance through June. Pressure was reported occasionally, but the ice in the immediate vicinity of the ship remained firm. The light was now very bad, except in the period when the friendly moon was above the horizon. A faint twilight about noon of each day reminded us of the sun and assisted us in the important work of exercising the dogs. The care of the teams was our heaviest responsibility in those days. The movement of the floes was beyond all human control, and there was nothing to be gained by allowing one's mind to struggle with the problems of the future, though it was hard to avoid anxiety at times. The conditioning and training of the dogs seemed essential, whatever fate might be in store for us, and the teams were taken out by their drivers whenever the weather permitted. Rivalries arose, as might have been expected, and on the 15th of the month a great race, the Antarctic Derby, took place. It was a notable event. The betting had been heavy, and every man aboard the ship stood to win or lose on the result of the contest. Some money had been staked, but the wages that thrilled were those involving stores of chocolate and cigarettes. The course had been laid off from Khyber Pass at the eastern end of the old lead ahead of the ship to a point clear of the jib boom, a distance of about 700 yards. 5 teams went out in the dim noon twilight, with a zero temperature and an aurora flickering faintly to the southward. The starting signal was to be given by the flashing of a light on the meteorological station. I was appointed starter, Worsley was judge, and James was timekeeper. The boatswain, with a straw hat added to his usual Antarctic attire, stood on a box near the winning post, and was assisted by a couple of shady characters to shout the odds, which were displayed on a board hung around his neck. 6-4 on Wild, evens on Crean, 2-1 against Hurley, 6-1 against Macklin, and 8-1 against McElroy. Canvas handkerchiefs fluttered from an improvised grandstand, and the pups, which had never seen such strange happenings before, sat round and howled with excitement. The spectators could not see far in the dim light, but they heard the shouts of the drivers as the teams approached, and greeted the victory of the favourite with a roar of cheering that must have sounded strange indeed to any seals or penguins that happened to be in our neighbourhood. Wild's time was 2:16, or at the rate of 10.5 miles per hour for the course. We celebrated Midwinter's Day on the 22nd. The twilight extended over a period of about 6 hours that day, and there was a good light at noon from the moon, and also a northern glow with wisps of beautiful pink cloud along the horizon. A sounding gave 262 fathoms with a mud bottom. No land was in sight from the masthead, although our range of vision extended probably a full degree to the westward. The day was observed as a holiday, necessary work only being undertaken, and, after the best dinner the cook could provide, all hands gathered in the Ritz, where speeches, songs, and toasts occupied the evening. After supper, at midnight, we sang God Save the King, and wished each other all success in the days of sunshine and effort that lay ahead. At this time the Endurance was making an unusually rapid drift to the north under the influence of a fresh southerly to southwesterly breeze. We travelled 39 miles to the north in 5 days before a breeze that only once attained the force of a gale, and then for no more than an hour. The absence of strong winds, in comparison with the almost unceasing winter blizzards of the Ross Sea, was a feature of the Weddell Sea that impressed itself upon me during the winter months. Another race took place a few days after the Derby. The 2 crack teams, driven by Hurley and Wild, met in a race from Khyber Pass. Wild's team, pulling 910 pounds, or 130 pounds per dog, covered the 700 yards in 2:09, or at the rate of 11.1 miles per hour. Hurley's team, with the same load, did the run in 2 minutes 16 seconds. The race was awarded by the judge to Hurley owing to Wilde failing to weigh in correctly. I happened to be a part of the load on his sledge, and a skid over some new drift within 50 yards of the winning post resulted in my being left on the snow. It should be said, in justice to the dogs, that this accident, while justifying the disqualification, could not have made any material difference in the time. The approach of the returning sun was indicated by beautiful sunrise glows on the horizon in the early days of July. We had 9 hours twilight on the 10th, and the northern sky, low to the horizon, was tinted with gold for about 7 hours. Numerous cracks and leads extended in all direction to within 300 yards of the ship. Thin, wavering black lines close to the northern horizon were probably distant leads refracted into the sky. Sounds of moderate pressure came to our ears occasionally, but the ship was not involved. At midnight on the 11th, a crack in the lead ahead of the Endurance opened out rapidly, and by 2 a.m. was over 200 yards wide in places, with an area of open water to the southwest. Sounds of pressure were heard along this lead, which soon closed to a width of about 30 yards and then froze over. The temperature at that time was minus 23 degrees Fahrenheit. The most severe blizzard we had experienced in the Weddell Sea swept down upon the Endurance on the evening of the 13th. And by breakfast time on the following morning, the kennels to the windward or southern side of the ship were buried under 5 feet of drift. I gave orders that no man should venture beyond the kennels. The ship was invisible at a distance of 50 yards, and it was impossible to preserve one's sense of direction in the raging wind and suffocating drift. To walk against the gale was out of the question. Face and eyes became snowed up within 2 minutes, and serious frostbites would have been the penalty of perseverance. The dogs stayed in their kennels for the most part, the old stagers putting out a paw occasionally in order to keep open a breathing hole. By the evening, the gale had attained a force of 60 or 70 miles an hour, and the ship was trembling under the attack. But we were snug enough in our quarters aboard until the morning of the 14th, when all hands turned out to shovel the snow from deck and kennels. The wind was still keen and searching, with a temperature of something like minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit, and it was necessary for us to be on guard against frostbite. At least 100 tons of snow were piled against the bows and port side, where the weight of the drift had forced the flow downward. The lead ahead had opened out during the night, cracked the pack from north to south, and frozen over again, adding 300 yards to the distance between the ship and Khyber Pass. The breakdown gang had completed its work by lunchtime. The gale was then decreasing, and the 3 days-old moon showed as a red crescent on the northern horizon. The temperature during the blizzard had ranged from minus 21 degrees to minus 33.5 degrees Fahrenheit. It is usual for the temperature to rise during a blizzard, and the failure to produce any fern effect of this nature suggested an absence of high land for at least 200 miles to the south and southwest. The weather did not clear until the 16th. We saw then that the appearance of the surrounding pack had been altered completely by the blizzard. The island floe containing the Endurance still stood fast, but cracks and masses of ice thrown up by pressure could be seen in all directions. An area of open water was visible on the horizon to the north, with a water indication in the northern sky. The ice pressure, which was indicated by distant rumblings and the appearance of formidable ridges, was increasingly a cause of anxiety. The areas of disturbance were gradually approaching the ship. During July 21st, we could hear the grinding and crashing of the working floes to the southwest and west, and could see cracks opening, working, and closing ahead. The ice is rafting up to a height of 10 or 15 feet in places. The opposing floes are moving against one another at the rate of about 200 yards per hour. The noise resembles the roar of heavy, distant surf. Standing on the stirring ice, one can imagine it is disturbed by the breathing and tossing of a mighty giant below. Early on the afternoon of the 22nd, a 2-foot crack running southwest and northeast for a distance of about 2 miles approached to within 35 yards of the port quarter. I had all the sledges brought aboard and set a special watch in case it became necessary to get the dogs off the floe in a hurry. This crack was the result of heavy pressure 300 yards away on the port bow, where huge blocks of ice were piled up in wild and threatening confusion. The pressure at that point was enormous. Blocks weighing many tons were raised 15 feet above the level of the floe.